you'll vanish into gloom. Mighty Flighty, it's hard to say just when she'll reappear on a broom. Other girls I've known were simply dimply, just another standard pretty face. But this one haunts me so, I daren't let her go. It's so thrilling, really chilly, when we share a brief embrace. Because she's mostly ghostly. What a mystic gift to have her on my arms. She is mostly ghostly, clearly the most different girl I've ever seen. A holiday when I'm with her, a holiday, yes, every day with her is Halloween.
Mostly Ghostly by, who did that? The Creatures. I've never heard of them, but that's a good song. I'll have to make a CD of these Halloween and ghost songs for Richard to listen to. I've got a lot of different ones about ghosts and witches and things like that, all the way back from the 1940s up to probably this, up to present. If you'd like, Richard. Can you hear me?
What was that?
Oh, I've got a lot of songs about ghosts, witches, monsters and things like that. That have been recorded from the 70s, from the 40s, 50s, all the way up to now. I think I even have one from the late 30s.
Yeah, if you could cut one out, I'd very much like that. Cut up a CD.
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
I've been doing ones that's concerned with UFOs for a while, and in the midst of looking for these things on the internet and in record stores and garage sales and all that, I find other things too.
Well, what I hate is I get so many radio interviews, and they always play Ghostbusters. Now, the tune's cute, I agree, but after a while it gets old.
Yeah, well, I don't want to play that. I don't like that song, and I don't like that kind of music. So.
Yeah, neither do I.
Wait, is this one working?
He finds himself.
Can you hear that at all?
Yeah, a little bit.
Up and down my spine, a new sensation falls. Fastly, ghastly, the way she floats on air and walks through walls.
It's about a guy who's in love with a ghost. before we went to our break there, you were describing all kinds of cases where you went and talked to people. Do people, you know, actually call you up and say, look, I have a ghost, can you come and get rid of it, please?
Well, no, not really. In fact, I don't do exorcisms. I don't get rid of ghosts. But if you want to, I can steer you to the people who do. And I have assisted in a variety of methods for attempting to get rid of ghosts, from soul rescue to flat-out exorcisms. And I don't know. I tend to be skeptical about some of the stuff. There's one fellow who charges $500 to get rid of a ghost. And he puts a little hat on his head that looks like a pyramid to concentrate mentally his psychic powers. And he puts on a funny robe with all kinds of symbols on it. And he wanders through the house with candles saying, go to the light. And it's all very showy, but it doesn't, usually I'm told the ghost still hangs around. So you can't get your money back either, even though he may fail in the attempt to get rid of your ghost.
Because of the nature of the paranormal, the proprietor makes no promises about getting rid of your ghost. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've also been to Soul Rescue. Have you ever heard of that?
No, not at all.
Well, there are groups of psychics who say that ghosts are trapped spirits, kind of like between floors on the elevator.
Uh-huh.
And I've worked with the groups of them, and now they come to your house, and they all form a circle. I worked with this one lady. All of her cohorts were dressed in black, looked like a bunch of nuns. Then she made a late entrance. I had this big, bat-winged, sleeved black dress with a silver amulet around her neck and a long, flowing hair. And I also smelled gin on her breath. And then they all sat together around the table while the people watched, including myself, the people with the ghost. And they all held hands, and from the lips of the medium came the story of this man who was murdered, and he'd been lynched, and he had loved this girl, and her father had trumped up charges against him that had him killed, and he haunts there. Everybody started crying. It was really an emotional fest. Everyone was, her makeup was running all down her cheeks. She looked like Tammy Baker, whatever her name was.
I like the first one.
Finally, after having this exhaustive 4-hour seance, they packed it all in and left, saying the house is much lighter now. The ghost was back in 24 hours.
Never left.
But that's soul rescue, and these people think they're doing good, and who knows, maybe they are. And who am I to say different?
Okay, we're talking about busting ghosts or getting rid of them. Are there any ways that ghosts can be called up or stimulated to appear?
Oh, yes. In fact, many people do it all the time. In fact, we were doing some of that at the Olivas Adobe, using divining rods to communicate or attempt to communicate to have them come forth. Interesting about that particular session we did. Now, if one person goes and communicates through any means, such as divining rods, with a ghost that gets an answer, that doesn't mean much. What I'm trying to do is create a number of different accounts over a long period of time. And one of the great mysteries of the Olivas Adobe is the identity of the mysterious ghost called the Lady in Black. There's a phantom of a woman seen wearing an old-style black dress. Now, who is it? It's probably one of the family members, because it's seen in the family quarters. But there are three different people it might be. Well, actually, four people it might be. And on all of the groups I've taken in there, I haven't told them what the other groups have gotten, but remarkably, they all come up with the same answer. In this case, it was a woman named Rebecca Olivas. Now, if you were there at the session, you may recall I talked about Rebecca very briefly and told a great story about one of the other candidates for the role of ghost, and that's Dominga Olivas and how she died, a very tragic circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if this was just imagination, it would have hit on that, right?
Right.
It would have been something that would have just said, oh, well, that must be it. It's got the story, it's got the tragedy, it's got all the elements. Bang, it's Dominga. But no, they say Rebecca.
Right.
And in that way, they have been similar accounts over years where people have communicated with whatever's there, and when asked, are you Rebecca, it says yes. So it's pretty mysterious, but again, whether it's really ghosts, I don't know. But the fact that so many people have come up with the same name suggests to me there's something going on here. That might be the truth.
Even when you're not around, they come up with the same name?
Yep. I've had my wife do it, and she has had similar things like that occur as well.
What, Richard? So, go ahead.
So it isn't like they're somehow reading my mind in some fashion and coming up with what I think it is.
Right.
I really don't know who it is.
I warned you I'd be asking questions like, well, how can you be so sure? And that the fact that other people are doing it, more than just you, but at least a few other people are doing it. What Richard is talking about is we stood in one of the rooms, and I didn't know about this before, but people can take divining rods in, the things that people use to find water and things like that, and ask questions. You have to establish a sort of protocol about what will mean yes and what will mean no. crossing the divining rods means yes, and moving apart means no. And we started as a group kind of asking questions while one woman held these divining rods. And what was interesting, like Richard said, is that the same name came up, Rebecca. Although we asked for some other things, like could you make something move, knock on the wall, touch somebody, and none of that seemed to have happened, at least while we were there. Has that actually ever happened while you were there?
Yes.
In the midst of questioning like that?
Yeah, we've had things like that. In fact, once we said, can you make something happen? And we had a large, this is in a bedroom, a nightgown, a 19th century nightgown, laying as a display on a bed. The thing jumped up. I mean, like it had a spring on it. There was no one standing by it, no fishing line, nothing like that. It jumped up and fell on the floor.
Did everybody scream?
Right at that very point when we asked, do something.
So that's a case where probably a lot of people did scream and yell.
No, people gasped and made. That pretty much ended the session right there. They were all ready to go home at that point.
Another thing that actually surprised me, fascinated me, and is when we were there today, I said, when does most of this stuff happen? Does it happen at night or in the day? And you said daytime.
Right, and it happens at different places at different times. Though I will admit, most of the stuff I've encountered there occurs in the early hours, or a little earlier than we were there. But other places, it occurs at different times. Like the Queen Mary, that ship in Long Beach, the active time there is between 2:30 and 4:30.
Really?
In the morning.
Yeah.
So in the morning.
Does anybody go through and do tours there between 2:30 and 4:30 in the morning?
I go over there myself. but I tell people they really want to see a ghost. And they are adamant. They want to encounter the unknown. They want to feel something. Go to the Queen Mary. Go in the middle of the week. Don't go on the weekends when it's full.
Wednesday.
Go when it's not busy. Check into one of the rooms or cabins on M Den. Try to get an old cabin. About half of them are haunted. And then get some sleep. Get up at 2:30 at night and just walk the decks. And I tell you, it's almost as if ghosts are normal. You walk around and you say, look, there's a ghost there. Well, so what? You know, it's almost as if you are invading their space. But I've had things happen. Now, my wife and I were walking. I remember it was 4:30 at night there, and I heard these footsteps. Now, there was nobody up, just me, my wife, and as far as you could see, up and down the deck, nobody, not a soul. Yet I heard footsteps, and my wife turned to me and said, those are the footsteps of the dead.
Yeah.
Very dramatic. And I said, no, they're not. It's just our echoes. So I grabbed a hold of her and stopped her, but the footsteps continued. I ran up the stairs to the next level, thinking that there were echoes from the deck above. There's nobody up there either. And it's really a spooky place, especially late at night.
You know what another Walter wanted to say something.
Yeah, you guys brought up the concept of these active time zones and being early in the wee early hours of the morning before dawn. This seems to correlate with fairy lore and the concept of the borderland. You know, which is at dusk. So maybe the rising and setting of the sun, for a variety of reasons we're all familiar with, maybe this is the zone, both at the end of the day and at the beginning of the day, when the veil is thinnest and whatever these things are can appear to us or come from the other dimension the easiest. It really correlates to the fairy lore borderlands concept.
Well, it could very well be that the people who developed the fairy lore were, had accidentally stumbled onto this time zone and how it's thinner at that particular time and more psychic events occur, be they seeing fairies or seeing ghosts or who knows what. There's a lot out there we simply don't know. And that's where I take my biggest umbrage against the debunkers and the skeptics out there. who, of course, really aren't skeptical at all. They know it's all BS, right?
Yeah, well,
they have already set their minds to that goal, prove it in that way. I tend to think that they fall apart because they think they know everything, that everything in the world has already been discovered. And that's where they make their mistake, because there's a whole bunch here we don't know. We still don't know what time is. We don't know what a lot of physics are. And the new physics has completely destroyed Newtonian physics.
Yeah.
So, you know, people say, well, that can't exist. It doesn't rule. And then you talk to any new physics person, and they say, well, yeah, could. Time travel is possible in new physics. So is, why not ghosts? There could be all sorts of stuff going on we don't know about that Newton and his kind of a watch mechanism universe cavalierly discarded as impossible.
Yeah, well, we've gotten to this point, and at least in this country, most people are fairly secure in their worldview, I think, and they were taught this way in science class and in school and all this, and it seems to work. As long as you can knock on it, it's there, and if it's not explained, then, you know, then it's either doesn't exist or, you know, let's just ignore it. I've coined a new term for not calling people skeptics, but fundamentalist skeptics. Because a real skeptic is somebody that doesn't take everything on faith and looks at all sides of an issue before making a decision.
Maybe Newton wasn't allowed to talk about what he knew about physics. Not all of it, anyway.
Maybe not.
There's a lot we don't know, and we still need to know. In fact, I see our study of ghosts, which is a smaller part of parapsychology. In fact, most parapsychologists sort of look at us ghost people as sort of the bastard child at the picnic.
Yeah.
You know, they look askance at us. They're more interested in EVP, thought transference, things of that nature.
Yeah.
And they see us with our divining rods or e-meters as kind of strangers before them. In fact, I've even considered starting a whole new branch or a sub-branch of parapsychology to be called phantomology, that just exclusively study the phenomenon of ghosts and hauntings and not go into all the other things such as ESP and things of that nature.
Walter said, what about objects being haunted?
Oh, yes, I've heard that as well. In fact, I've even seen it. A couple, not far from where I live now, purchased a large statue of a conquistador. It was about 5 foot tall. And it was gold, all painted gold. It was plaster. And they brought it into the house, and as soon as they brought it in, they started to see this ghost of a hippie. All dressed in a vest, headband, and long hair, and all that. And he was seen around the statue.
Uh-huh.
So they called me up. I told them, well, get rid of the statue. If it started to come with the statue, get rid of it. See what happens. And so when they moved it, the thing fell open, and it was hollow. There was a hidden door in it, and inside they found packets of drugs. And they got rid of those, and once they did that, the ghost stopped. So the theory is that this was a guy's stash.
Yeah.
That he died of a drug overdose, and his family got rid of it at the swap meet, and that's where they got it from.
That was some really good
knowing
weed.
That it was full of dope.
Uh-huh.
And that's why it still has this attachment. It could very well be that people who are drug addicts continue their addiction after death.
That, or he had some kind of experience that showed him this non-time and space-bound kind of area, and he was stuck in that area, and the last connection he had to it was whatever was sitting inside that statue.
Very well, very true. That's a good possibility. But that, I found that. There's another lady I helped. Who purchased a chair, a large ornate leather wood 19th century chair, very comfortable, made in England, and she took it home, and she came into the living room of her apartment, and saw a man sitting in the chair that had disappeared. It was a little Englishman.
Uh-huh.
And he seemed to be a friendly sort. He smiled and all that at her. He never walked around. He just stayed in the chair. I guess it was his chair. And so I was called in, and we investigated, and finally the psychic I had told him, you got a choice. Learn to live with the ghost or get rid of the chair. And, of course, she decided to keep the chair. So as long as I know, the ghost is still there.
Well, it seems friendly and harmless. I think I'd keep the chair, too.
Yeah. By the way, he seemed to be nice company. He never gives her trouble. So maybe he's the best companion she could ask for.
You know what, Walter? Since Walter is here, after the second class, I came in and told him, speaking of objects or places or whatever that are haunted, one of the most fascinating stories was about that window in a house, the ghost window or apparitional window. Could you talk about that case a little bit and what happened and where it was located, etc.?
That was one of the most remarkable cases that my wife and I ever investigated. It's a little house, well, actually not a little house, a Victorian mansion, 100 years old, had a big tower on the side of it where the master bedroom was. There was a window on one side of the tower and a blank wall on the other. Well, a lot of things happened there, but the most intriguing phenomenon was a ghost window. People would go where there was a blank wall, they would walk in that room and see a window. Not only was the window there, it had curtains. So it had a ghost window and ghost curtains. And the man who worked, who was a diver for the Navy, very no-nonsense kind of guy, and he woke up late one night, and the moon was shining through the window in his eyes, a full moon. So he got up to close the curtains, and his hands went right through the curtains, and the whole window and the moon vanished. And he later discovered there was no full moon that night. So evidently it was from some other time. That's what got him to call me in. Prior to that, his wife asking and begging was not enough. Well, we went over there. Now, over the years, several people had seen the ghost woman, the ghost window, I'm sorry. There was one lady who saw it. Two other people saw it. I went in the room a dozen times, never saw a dang thing outside of what was, you know, normally there. My wife went through the house. I wasn't with her. I was in the first floor conducting a number of EVP experiments down there.
Uh-huh.
And she went with two of the people. One was the lady who lived in the house, and another was a friend of hers. They all went upstairs to the thing, and they saw the window. I wasn't there, so I can't swear stack of Bibles that it's true, but I do believe my wife, and I do believe the other two people. She actually went to the window and stuck her head out the window.
Out the window? You said before she just looked out the window.
I wouldn't have had that kind of guts. But knowing my wife, she's crazy. She might do that.
Oh, that's right. You said she stuck her head out the window and she held hands with the other two people.
Yeah, she held the hands. The two people held her hand. She saw a world very flat and almost black and white. And she saw a sawmill, which we later learned had burned in 1932, wooden sidewalks on Model T Ford, and a little girl skipping rope. And then when she pulled her head back in, she got real sick. She said her stomach started to churn, and she pulled her head out, and the whole thing disappeared.
And it makes you wonder what would have happened if somebody just decided to just climb through the window.
Yeah, what happens if they got stuck on the other side? That might account for people who just vanish. They walk through a door, or they walk through a window or something, and they're trapped on the other side.
And another question I asked you, which is an obvious question, was, had anybody ever seen the window from the outside?
No, not to my knowledge. Now, I wish they had. That would make a much better story, but they hadn't. You have to go with what you got.
What about explaining people who just show up, a la Caspar Hauser and things like that?
Well, that's, again, one of the great mysteries of the world. This young man just kind of appeared, and yet he had been raised in a darkened room somewhere. There's a lot of theories that he might be related to nobility or something like that. It could very well be that people just appear. We do know, we have a fascinating account from the 16th century about the Spanish guard in Manila. And the Spanish guard went to report to work. He's in the Spanish army. And when he walked out the door, he was in Mexico City. And he went to report. They didn't believe what had happened. They arrested him. They thought he was a witch. They actually talked to and wrote to his commanding officer in Madrid, who took a ship. And it took like 3 months to get there. But he made his way all the way to Mexico City and identified the man as his friend who had mysteriously vanished in Madrid.
Uh-huh.
So what had happened to this guy? He walked through a door in Madrid and wound up in Mexico City. Might be some kind of UFO or psychic vortex or who knows what. But in order to have done that, because in both cases it was 12 noon. But of course, 12 noon in Madrid does not correspond to 12 noon in Mexico City.
Mm-hmm.
So he must have gone back in time about 5 hours to have appeared in Mexico City at noon of the same day.
Yeah, so it had to make sense in a human logical sense, although not in a real logical sense.
You get the blue nun, Sister Agreda. Have you read about her?
Yes, the one from New Mexico.
Yeah, very famous in New Mexico. She preached to the Indians in New Mexico without ever leaving Spain. She managed to somehow do this, and they actually sent a priest who had been to New Mexico, and he went back to Spain and interviewed her. Now, she actually knew language, part of the Indian language. She could describe people and places. He was ready to put her up for sainthood, but her cause got sidetracked, and she still is not listed as a saint, though she is beatified.
Uh-huh.
So you get these strange things out there which seem to defy logic. There's something going on here, and there's more to it than just ghosts of the dead. There's something to do with the nature of reality and time and space as we know it.
When you go out and are called in or go on an investigation, what is your normal procedure? People would like to know, what is ghost hunting? What do you do?
Well, first, I talk to people, usually on the phone or sometimes on the Internet. I usually like to talk to them on the phone first to see if it's a recurrent event. It doesn't do any good whatsoever if it happened years ago.
Mm-hmm.
People call me up, oh, why, 6 years ago we saw this and saw that. I say, well, what happened recently? Oh, nothing. Well, I'm not going to go out there. Or if it seems that they seem to be a little off their mark and, something I don't want to deal with, people saying that they're encountering Satan or they have other things like that, I usually will not bother going out there. But if it's a recurrent phenomenon, if it's hot, if it's now, I will set up a team. And the team will actually consist of at least 3 or 4 people. And then I will go out to the site and we'll photograph, we'll take measurements, I'll take depositions, I'll talk to the people using usually a tape recorder, and I'll try to collect as much data as I can. And by the way, when I go out there, On the first visit, I usually am very, very skeptical. I certainly want to discount events as much as I can. If there's a logical explanation, I want that. And if there isn't, I'll come back a second time with either the same team or a new team, a bigger team, and then we do an overnight ghost hunt. Our goal is to collect data to see if there is, in fact, a real ghost. That's what our goal is.
What do you do to collect the data? I mean, you described that you use sort of psychic methods, I guess, and then also electronic.
Right. You use e-meters. You want to find out if there's anything there. You use tape recorders, photography. to see if we get anything, any anomalies that might be there. I also study the static electrical field. I use a device called a cyber probe, which measures deviations in the psychic, in the static electrical field. Now, the theory behind this device is that ghosts impact the static electrical zone, and you can trace their shadow as it moves through a site. And I've had some pretty good luck with that in the past. But our goal is to try, if we can, to measure anything like a cold spot. And I'll try experiments like I'll bring objects in and see if they're moved. We'll do dowsing rods. We'll do a variety of different things. And yeah, I have psychics who actually do seances even in an attempt to gather more data. And then, of course, when we're done with that, compare the historic record to see if we can find any validation for what the information is that we've collected. Are the names legitimate? Were there really people with that name? Are the events listed in any way recorded in the historic record linked to that site?
I asked a question a little while ago. I don't know if we got sidetracked a little bit. I was saying that a lot of people want to get rid of ghosts, but are there any ways to get ghosts to appear, kind of stimulate them into existence so that they can be studied or seen or whatever you want to do?
Well, that's one of the things we do when we go out looking for ghosts. Now, you can, of course, do a seance and try to attract ghosts that way. Some people use a Ouija board trying to get information using that means. Another thing I have found, and I've found other ghost hunters doing it, is what I call re-stimulation. And that means trying to set up an environment where the ghost will feel more comfortable and therefore appear. So if the ghost is from the 19th century, you dress in 19th century. If the ghost liked to gamble, you play poker. The ghost likes a particular kind of music from a particular historical era, then you play that kind of music. And all of this seems to increase and enhance our ability to get psychic phenomena.
Do people going on these things feel kind of silly at first doing this kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah. But I first developed this program by talking to historical reenactors, those Civil War guys who dress up in the costumes of the Union and the Confederacy. Well, many of them have encountered ghosts. In fact, I talked to one guy. He was at, where in the world was he at? He was at some fort in Georgia. And he was with his guys. They were resting after doing their reenacting. And an officer came out, all dressed to the nines, that yelled at them to stand at attention, which they played along with. And he told them they were all a horrible group of people and that they were the worst excuse for soldiers he ever saw. And then he promptly disappeared. And that took place right in the afternoon. So I get lots of stories like that from historic reenactors, especially on battlefields, where they're actually reenacting a battle that was fought long ago on the same day, on the same spot. And in those incidents, they've actually seen, they look off to their left, and there's a whole other army, Confederate unit. And, there's some more reenactors have joined us, so hi. They've even waved at them, and they waved back, and then they all disappear. So I started to get that, and I started to think that maybe they're being stimulated by all the activity.
Uh-huh.
I found similar things in haunted places in Hollywood, where they used to make movies a long time ago, and they have a ghost there. Well, people come in to the old sets and start making a new movie. The ghosts come back. It's like they're somehow stimulated to once again make an appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a theory. I don't have all the answers to it. Now, I do know music seems to have a lot to do with it. But it can't be recorded music. It's got to be real music. In other words, made with instruments rather than a tape recorder or a record player.
Well, then you actually have the people there. They're thinking about their music, and that creative act may have something to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I've had guitarist at the Olivas Adobe. We actually did get some EVP out of that. We went to one of our old missions, and we used someone playing a flute, and were able to record all kinds of events after the experiment. Now, I've talked to a group in the Midwest, and they use the same technique. They call it ghost baiting. That somehow that by doing things, dressing in costumes or dancing or playing games of the 19th century, they actually stimulate the ghost. So they've done it as well. So others are also investigating this kind of activity.
I bet if you lose yourself in the game or the whatever it is, it helps a lot more instead of just thinking that you're acting it.
Yeah, we have to become part of it. It's sort of like the ghost at the inn, the Glen Tavern Inn in Santa Paula, where this man was killed in a poker game.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a group of people play poker in the very same room. And we had all kinds of things happen right after our poker game we had.
What sorts of things?
Well, let's see. We've heard knocking that shouldn't have been there. The lights went on and off mysteriously, and the door, which was locked, opened up.
You know what? You mentioned the flute, and I think you had mentioned this in class, that the flute seems to be a very important instrument, and particularly with your investigations about the Native Americans, the Chumash that lived in the Central Coast, and that seems
to be. Chumash believed the flute was a holy instrument, and their shaman were very adept at its use, and there were at this one particular mission, people told of hearing a flute music. So of course, I had my wife, who's a flautist, bring her flute along, and she played a little bit, you know, some trills and some little basic stuff. We recorded it, and at first we got nothing, but then when we played it back, it sounded like there were three flutes playing. Heck, it was weird, because you started out, you could hear the one, and then another one joined, and another one, and they were playing different variations of the same music. So it's like a ghostly jam session.
That's cool.
And that same night, we heard other voices on the site at the old mission, and they heard people chanting. It's like the once we did the flute thing, the ghosts found out, oh, we're friendly, and so they all came out to play. And it was really, really one of the best nights we've ever had in psychic investigations. But I urge others to do that. Take a musical instrument along. Play something appropriate to the place and see if that helps in attracting psychic phenomenon, ghosts, or what have you.
What's the, you know, we talked about EVP just a little bit. What's the, some significant things you remember getting on EVP, or even frightening or startling? And also, what's the best some of the best methods to record this? What kind of responses do you get? What's the best methodology, etc.?
It's really hard because there's lots of people doing EVP right now. I was just using a real simple tape recorder. In fact, when I first heard of it, I dismissed it. I thought it would be too easy to fake. I mean, nobody's around. You can just tear up your tape recorder and go, get out.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. And they call it a ghost. So I just thought, that's just people whispering. Well, I was at the Glen Tavern Inn, as a matter of fact. At one point, we were doing an experiment having nothing to do with EVP. I had a tape recorder. When I played it back, I got a voice saying, "You will die." And then
Very clearly.
It wasn't like "we're going to die," something like that. It was "you will die." It was real slow and measured. That had a harsh, whispered-like quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what got my attention. I went to another place where it was haunted. I was interviewing the lady, and I used tape recorders in my interviews, and I asked her if she knew the name of the ghost. Didn't hear a dang thing. Said no. And then when I was transcribing the tape, I got on the tape recorder a voice saying, "Christopher." And I thought, boy, that's kind of amazing. And some people just seem to have a much better gift for picking up EVP than others.
What about one of the things I've noticed, I enjoy watching Ghost Hunters, you know, the TAPS guys, and one of the things that kind of bothers me when they pick up EVP, I notice that a couple of the investigators, not the main guys, Jason and the other guy, won't do this, but the younger guys are just constantly blah, 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 talking about artifacts in the room, talking about a piece of furniture, just going on and on and on, and then later in the playback, they picked up EVP, and you can't hear what's going on because these guys won't shut up. Now, what do you think about that?
Well, there is a theory that ghosts are somehow stimulated by other conversation. I don't buy that for a minute. But it's a theory. The one guy gets all this EVP, and he uses rushing water. So he goes to a sink, turns the tap on, and then turns on his tape recorder. And, of course, the sound of the rushing water, you can imagine all kinds of things there.
Yeah.
I don't like EVP where they have to twist it, slow it down, and speed it up. I want things I can't understand, something that's right there. You will die. That's good. Or, you know, get out, or whatever it is it says, something that I don't need to tell someone what it says. I can say, here, listen to this and tell me what it says. Now, if they say, you will die, as I think, that means something. Now, I've had a lot of people with screwball sounds, you know, and they think it says this or think it says that, and they've convinced themselves that this is what it is. I think EVP is a bizarre phenomenon. I don't really know how it gets there. It's, you don't record it. It only comes back in the playback. And as I say, some people are really good at getting it. I have a friend who, whenever he could, he gets it. But I always go out, and one time out of 10, if I'm lucky, I get anything.
I want to hear the voice that says, Walter, play these lottery numbers. And then
I want to hear that voice, too. Give me some good at lottery. Now, my wife went into a trance and contacted the great beyond and got some numbers. So we thought, that's it. No more scraping, no more scrouching. We can actually, you know, live in style. We played the numbers, none of them won. Later, I found out that like 2 months later, the numbers came up.
So you just have to keep playing.
The timing's way off. You can't. It doesn't work that way. I wish it did. I'd be rich if it did, but it isn't.
Well, you know what? When your wife was in the class, she was talking to you both, I think, were talking about going to Vegas and Reno, and she actually does pretty well there.
She does, but her forte is two things she can do. One is blackjack, and she's been thrown out for counting cards. She doesn't count cards. She just goes on the impression. She gets it. And she's real good at slot machines. And she'll just wander around a casino, and then all of a sudden she'll stop, go to a slot machine, put in her quarters, and bang, it comes off. It wins. And so she's very good at that. I'm lousy at it. And so as much as she wins, I usually lose. So I've kind of given up trying to make a million on slot machines or any kind of gambling.
If she's that good at it, why isn't she down there every couple of weeks?
Oh, because sometimes she loses. It's not consistent. I wish it were. And then we'd be living the high life, but it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. See, this is a phenomenon in psychic research that if you use something too much, it tends to degrade it, and especially if it's for something like personal gain. And it sounds like a very easy explanation. Oh, well, then it's full of crap because you can't win money at it. But there seems to be some block somewhere to keep you from using whatever gift you have for any kind of monetary.
It's called ethics.
Yeah, well, that might be part of it. But I have no problem with being unethical and making a little bit of money here. But on the other hand, maybe it has to do with that down effect where someone does well at something at first and then it drops off.
Right.
I found that to be the case with Debbie. She'll find a slot machine, do real well with it, and then it just stops. And then for a while she can't do anything. And, of course, the secret is finding, you know, when to stop playing and not put the quarters in. But I've seen her take a slot machine up to $300-$400 and then wind up losing it all.
Hmm. So Walter mentioned that, what's the name of the show?
Ghost Hunters with Taps.
Ghost Hunters, yeah.
Yeah, well, I know you probably watch these. I watch the UFO shows and that, and I almost universally can't stand them. But do you have any favorite movies or TV shows that deal with the paranormal and that you would recommend?
I despise Ghost Hunters because they're so scientific that they throw the baby out with the bathwater. Now, I kind of blend, as you probably have seen in my work, science with the metaphysical. If I had been in some of the houses those plumbers have done, I would have been doing 6 trillion different things. Uh-huh. Now, here they get a little thing, they get a light, or they get something moved, and they call that, that's it, they're ready to go home. To me, that's where I would start, not go home. So I really take them to task, and I yell a lot at the TV whenever I watch that show.
Yeah, me
too. There are some good shows out there. I don't like Most Haunted. That's not one of my favorite shows. I think it's too based on the one psychic, Derek. And there have been cases where he's been caught cheating. At least that's what I've heard. And whether he doesn't, I don't know. I don't like one show that depends upon just one individual too much.
Yeah.
And Dead Famous, I've done a lot of their shows. It's now got a new name, I think. It's called Scariest Places or something like that. And it's running on, I think, the Discovery or Family Channel. And I've done some of their shows. I know some of their people. They're pretty good. But I don't really have any shows I watch with any regularity. I do have some movies I like. I really like The Sixth Sense. That was excellent. Mm. And The Others, that was a good ghost show. I like that as well. I haven't found a program that really meets my needs. I used to watch Sightings a great deal a long time back. I wish there was a new program like that out there that could really get into haunted places and do more than just look for a couple of little events or try to get more into what's happening or try to stimulate what's happening or try to get the story behind the ghost.
Now I forgot what I was going to say about these shows. Do you find that there's, when you watch them, that there's, if you do, that you find yourself sitting there and kind of going, get on with it, and I know this already, and it never gets past that?
Yeah, it's all very elementary. I think plumbers do not good ghost hunters make. And that's true. I mean, if I had a plumbing problem, I'd definitely call them in. But ghost problem, probably not.
Okay, we've got about 10 minutes left, and we've kind of gone over a little bit about goals and what does this tell us. But my main question here at the end of all this is, what kind of goals do you have for your research? What do you want? What do you hope to prove? Do you hope to get people to believe you? And what do you think the answer will be if you and other researchers get some sort of answer as to what ghosts and hauntings are?
Oh, I think that there's answers out there. The very fact, when I started doing this back in the 70s, late 70s, only 1 out of 10 Americans believed in ghosts. Now it's 1 out of 3. So... one out of four, I'm sorry. There has been an increase. In fact, a recent poll conducted by, of all people, the Skeptical Inquirer, says that ghosts are far more accepted on college campuses amongst the young. So there are a growing acceptance to the study. I think that's a goal right there.
Of course, they think it's horrible.
If I find some more answers to what it is that's out there, I will... figure this is a success. I won't have all the answers, but I hope to teach and to bring the message out, bring it to the public, so that others will take up the work after I'm gone. I want them to build upon my discoveries, what I've found, my theories, and hopefully take it to the next level. Now, I won't live long enough to get all the answers I want to find out the true nature of ghosts. I hope when I die, I'll be able to continue my work from the other side. maybe I'll come back, Greg, and bite you on the bottom or something, or cause something to happen so you too will be assured that we do continue on after the thing called death.
So, yeah, that was one of my questions. What do ghosts and hauntings tell us about the nature of reality and our relationship to it?
Well, I think, doing the years of research, the messages gotten from those who have come back from all over the world, all eras, all times, modern, old, you name it, all are unanimous. There's nothing to be afraid of. It's okay. And the people are all right. Our loved ones are still alive. They're still in a different form, in a different place, and we'll meet them again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I first got involved in this, I thought that wasn't the case. It had to be a scientific answer, some kind of place memory or emotional trace theory or dimensional theory. But as I've passed through the years and talked to people of all stripes, the more metaphysical I have become.
Mm-hmm.
And I've become, well, more spiritual and more believing that the world we know is only a shadow of what really exists. And what we are as individuals, I believe now, as is my philosophy, we continue on. We're not done when we die. Death is not the end. It's only a new beginning.
Sounds like you wouldn't have said that 20 years ago.
No, I wouldn't have said that at all. In fact, I would have laughed at you. I would have called you a religious nut.
Uh-huh.
But you just can't keep that skepticism in the face of just so much evidence.
Yeah.
There's so many people I've talked to, you know, who seem to be of good, solid mind. You know, not all Christian religious fanatics or New Age people, just regular folks who've seen something beyond our realm of existence.
You know, if people want to see or experience a ghost, what's the best device you can give them? Where can they go? We went over this a little bit, like the Queen Mary or Olivas Adobe, but what if they're not in the Southern California area?
There are ghosts all over the place.
Yes.
There's a book you can get by a fellow named Dennis Hawk, and I think it's called the Ghostly Guideways or Ghostly United States. List places all over the nation where you can see and encounter ghosts. New Orleans has quite a number of ghosts in it, but they're found in old hotels like the Stanley in Colorado. Virginia City in Nevada is just chock full of ghosts. There are several old hotels there with ghosts in them. I would suggest finding one of these sites and spending some time in them, talking to people who work there, and seeing what you can see on your late night expeditions. Go out late at night and see what you can detect. But it's going to take a little work. You just can't walk down the street to Ghosts Are Us and get some information. You have to actually take the time, the work, to look at it. Now, I've given advice to people all over the world on my website. People contact me at my website. In fact, it was one of the first up on the subject of ghosts back in 1995, and that's www.ghost-stalker.com. And I answer questions from people in Norway and England, a lot of people in England, Canada, East Coast, West Coast, Hawaii, China even. I actually had some accounts from people in China and Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, find a haunted place. Investigate and keep accurate notes. That's what it's all about, documenting the experience.
So you mentioned your website there. Could you maybe list some of your books and where people can get them and to learn a little bit more about what you've been doing and what your interests are?
Well, my first book is still in print. It's called Ghosts of the Haunted Coast, Pathfinder Publishing. Gone through 5 printings. You can get that on Amazon.com, or you can get it on eBay or any of these places. That's pretty common.
Uh-huh.
But I've written a total of 15 books over the years, and they include The Haunted Southland, Haunted Ventura, Ghost Stalker's Guide to Haunted California, Haunted Ojai, The Haunted Ventura. I've just finished The Ghosts of the California Missions, about the mission ghosts here in California. I have pending publication right now, The Ghosts of Carson City, Nevada, and I have a book on several other ghostly places here in California. In fact, I'm working on a book right now called How to Hunt Ghosts, which will include all of my many theories, as well as a listing of places in the United States rumored to have ghosts.
Okay, we've got 4 minutes. Is there anything else you want to say, or do you want to say goodbye, or what would you like?
Ghosts are a very fascinating subject. I've been very pleased on the number of people I've encountered who've had ghostly sightings. I've managed to, in the course of my research, go to some places which would be closed to the general public. I spent the night three times locked onto Alcatraz Island, once locked in Al Capone's cell. I've gotten a chance to go to old castles in England, actually tour the Tower of London, my wife and I by ourselves. I've been escorted through the Black Museum at New Scotland Yard. I've had a chance to tour the Orchard House, very haunted place in Lexington, Massachusetts. I've gotten opportunities to meet some really wonderful people. And yes, encounter some very unique phenomena. So ghosts have just been something that's helped to define and better my life in so many different ways. I would not be the same person I am today if I hadn't had that encounter back in 1978 that caused me to take up this quest to discover the true nature of ghosts and haunted houses. I don't have the answers now, and it's my hope that someday I will at least answer some of these great riddles.
I think you've answered some of them here on this show and stimulated people to look into it further. I was certainly a lot more interested in the paranormal, at least from the haunting and ghost angle, after taking your class, because I had certain ideas about it before I started, and through your lectures, it just expanded my interest, and I don't think I would have gone to the Olivas Adobe on a ghost hunt, you know, maybe 5 years ago or last year, but it seemed like the most important thing I had to do today.
Well,
it was wonderful.
You could come. I'm glad I could give you the benefit of the years of my experience. The classes, the lectures didn't just evolve overnight. They actually were things that I've worked on for, well, decades. So
right.
I'm glad I could share it with you, and I'm glad you took the material to heart.
Okay, Richard. It was so nice having you on the show. Great, great stuff, and probably the most interesting show I've had in a while. And
thank you.
I'd like to put it up online. It'll be available on radioforall.net under my name, Greg Bishop, as the producer, probably by the middle of this next week. And would you come back on again, Richard, at some point?
Oh, sure. Just call me up. Let me know.
All right. Okay, we've been talking with Richard Sennett, ghost stalker, ghost hunter extraordinaire, and probably one of the best-known researchers in the country. And thanks so much again, Richard.
Thank you.
All right, bye. Well, that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I think in the next couple of weeks we're going to talk to another couple of ghost researchers.
Marla James is available next Sunday if you're interested in her. She's Orange County based. She's the one that's done a lot throughout Southern California, but is helping a lot with the chapter on ghosts in the Latitude 33 book, at the ghosts at Disneyland. And there's another one the week after that I'm waiting to hear back from again.
All righty then. It just changed 10 o'clock right now, which is the end of Radio Mysterio. So we'll be back next week probably with more ghost stuff. My God, it's turning into the ghost show.
Hey.
It's turning into ghost
to
ghost.
We're on a roll, as long as we're learning something new and blazing trails.
Yeah, and we didn't play Ghostbusters. Why do they play that when he's on? It's the first thing people think of.
Because it's popular media world. You know, those are the people who do it. It's all what's in popular media. And
he talked about this in class. He goes, I wish there was a way we could capture ghosts. People get the wrong idea. I don't know what was going on in that movie. I enjoyed the movie when it came out. I mean, I didn't even think it had anything to do with the real science, whatever, the field of paranormal research and hauntings and ghosts.
Well, it was a big, fun comedy romp with cool special effects. And, you know,
for the
Bill,
time, yeah.
And the funniest line in the movie, Bill Murray's, that's right, Judge, that's right, Your Honor, this man has no penis or whatever. Remember the dickless line?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
my other favorite one was, listen, do you smell something?
But
So we'll be back next week, Radio Misterioso, Walter and I, and more ghostesses.
I have a signing this week.
Oh, yeah, please, announce that. It's in San Diego.
Yeah, Thursday night at the Borders in Mission Valley, San Diego. I'll be appearing as EA Guest, the author of The Secret of the Amazon Queen, which is about a haunted hero, lots of ghosts and scary apparitions and horror in that novel, if you haven't read it. And I'll be signing that from 7 to 9 p.m., Borders, Mission Valley, San Diego.
All righty, then. Please try and make it down there. I don't know if I can. If I did, I'd come down and say, hey, Walter! And he'd say, shut up, I'm EA Guest. So, try and make it down there if you can. I think my signing days are over until I produce another book, or we produce another book.
Well, we'll be signing Latitude 33 when it's done.
That's right. So thanks for listening, Kill Radio. This is Radio Misterioso. As I say every week, please help us with our rent and keeping this station here, because otherwise I'll have to do it from my house, and that's no fun. I like the ritual of coming down here. It's all about ritual. I'll probably haunt this station after I'm dead and gone. So we'll be back next week, and I don't want to play Ghost of Stephen Foster. Everybody hears that. No. Ooh, no, not Satan is real, although I like that song. I've played this a few times, but it's a good one. It's not about ghosts. It's about the girl that dies, and she keeps saying she's afraid of the dark.
Never heard that.
Jeannie's Afraid of the Dark? You haven't heard that?
No.
Dolly Parton and Porter Wagoner?
No.
Oh, my God. Well, here it is. Jeannie's Afraid of the Dark by Dolly Parton and Porter Wagoner, when they were an item for a little while, and producing music just like this.
That's pretty creepy.
Yeah.
Come running into our bedroom almost every night. Her soft little face would be wet from her tears and her little heart pounding with fright. She'd hold at her arms, then she'd climb in beside us. In a small voice we'd hear her remark, Mommy and Daddy, can I take you with you? 'Cause Jeannie's afraid of the dark. One day in the summer, we took some flowers to place on some old family graves. Jeannie said, Mommy, ain't it dark in the ground? Oh, Daddy, I'd be so afraid. Then she looked up at her daddy and me and said something that broke both our hearts. She said, when I die, please don't bury me, 'cause Jeannie's afraid of the dark.
Jeannie was always afraid of the dark, and we never could understand why. 'Cause we looked after Jeannie with the very best of care, because Jeannie was our only child. Perhaps it was death that she was so afraid of. 'Cause it took her one dark, stormy night. I think we always knew that we'd never see Jeannie groan. 'Cause it seemed that she was destined to die. But on Jeannie's grave, we placed an eternal flame that glows and never loses its spark. And on the darkest night, there's always a light. 'Cause Jeannie's afraid of the dark.
Our Jeannie's afraid of the dark.